Sounds good.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Canine Connection Podcast. In today's episode, we're going to talk about some reflections on a recent trial that Lori attended. Every time I go to a trial, I leave there with thoughts about how I can improve my handling and training, thoughts about things that went well, things that could have gone better. Sometimes I even have ideas about what my students could do to improve their ring performance. So we decided that periodically we would just kind of do episodes on reviewing what happened at the trial. So Lori was at a trial this weekend. She was at kind of a little bit of a killer trial. It's two trials in one day for 2 days. That means you're going in the ring 4 times a day, 2 days in a row. That does not include warming up for and doing runoffs. All right, so I'm going to kick it over to Lori, and you're going to tell us all about the weekend.
Yeah, and I'm still recovering from it. It was crazy. It was a really long weekend. It was super hard, super fun. And, you know, it's really not a normal thing that I do, or I don't think many people do, is go to a 2-day trial that runs two trials running concurrently each day, which is, like Petra said, 4 classes a day, and it's a total of 8 classes over the weekend. And there's times where you're running from one ring to the other, depending on how the rings are running. You know, one judge could be running a little slower than the other. So you can come out of utility and literally have a dog in front of you before you have to go over to the next ring and go into open. So I knew it would be really tough forever. She's only 4. She's still green in my eyes. She has not had experiences like that under her belt. So I did go into the weekend just hoping, especially because I'm prepping for the NOC, I was just looking to have her maintain attitude.
So let me just jump in. So when you talk about the NOC, you're talking about that's for competition obedience. That's our national championship event that comes around once a year. And it's super grueling and challenging because the dogs this year it's going to be at a different location. It's not as big. So the first day the dogs will go in the ring 6 times. And then they'll take the top 50 into the next morning. Those dogs will go another 6 times. And out of those, they'll take the top 20. And those teams will compete in 4 rings with 2 judges in each ring after lunch. And that will determine the winner and the top 10. So when she's talking about prepping for the NOC, that's what she's referring to. Sorry, Lori.
Yeah, no, that's good. Thanks for explaining that. So really, it was a weekend in my eyes of just kind of testing Ever's mental fortitude, her mental endurance, and her physical endurance, because we don't normally, I don't normally even train that way, let alone trial that way. So this was, I knew going in it was going to be hard and it was going to be tough. So the weekend went really well. You know, Ever actually went in pretty strong, and we did really well the first day. She won 3 out of her 4 classes. She tied for first in the 3rd class, lost the runoff, which is fine. It can go either way. And she did really well. However, you know, there were things that I did take away from that first day, you know, as we always talk about, like, what lessons did we learn, which I am always trying to think about and observe things going on with my dog, myself, what the judges are doing, so that I can make improvements, especially if there's a trial going on the next day. or for my students, so that I can say, hey, this is what happened in the utility ring this weekend, which I never saw. So we need to definitely train for that. One of the things that actually did happen in the utility ring, which I'll mention really quick, was, and I did have this before, but I do want to note it because it was a little bit unusual. You know, when you're in the utility ring for articles, which is one of the exercises in utility, we have to normally face a chair that our two articles are placed on that we have to scent. And this judge actually had the chair, I would say at least, and we can post a video of this so people can see it. The chair was actually at least 6 to 8 feet away to the left. Like literally we had to leave our dog when he said, take an article. Like it wasn't just take an article. It was like, go for a 10-minute walk and get your article and come back. So I had to leave Ever sitting there, walk across the front of her, take an article, walk all the way back. And that's hard. Like that's a lot of it's dead time anyway, mm-hmm. sitting there at the article pot, at the chair for articles. And then having to actually leave her. Some dogs get worried about that. And actually when I watched my video, I left her and I swear like her ears went up, like almost like, is she going to go get me a cookie off that? Like that's kind of what it looked like, you know, cause it wasn't something normally that we see. But it was definitely something to note because that can be really weird for the dogs, things like that. But Ever did really well the first day. However, you know, that was a lot. 4 classes in one day, banging them out back to back. There wasn't a whole lot of dead time in between mm-hmm. them. So by the 3rd class, I could see it was getting a little hard. You know, attitude starts to slip and things start to get loose a little bit. You can see that, especially with a green dog. So I'm always thinking of, you know, what do I need to do to support my dog? What do I need to do to make her feel better in the ring? You know, doing articles twice, doing broad jumps twice, doing drop on recalls twice. And some of those things are weaker exercises for the dogs. Like they're not those, every dog has strengths and weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So seeing her slip a little bit, starting to get tired, I just decided to reinforce the heck out of her. And
so let me just jump in for a second. So what does that look like? Like, what does, you know, what does she look like? What is giving you that indication that she's, because I'm pretty sure, I would guess that if you posted a video of the 3rd or 4th class, my guess would be, I haven't seen it, that people looking at it from the outside would probably go, wow, that looks like a pretty nice class, right? So to help them understand what to look for, what is it that you see that gives you that indication that she's starting to have a little bit of a hard time?
Yeah. So what I start to see with Ever is I see like her ears are starting to be back, you know, more than they're up. She actually does this weird thing with her healing. I started noticing that she actually starts to, like, if you're ever really nervous and you know, like you're about to like give a speech and like all of a sudden, like your mouth goes dry and you feel like you have to like swallow, mm-hmm. like you have to swallow spit mm-hmm. almost. And like, you can't.
Right.
That's what she starts to do. Like she's like licking her lips and she's doing this like weird thing with her throat because she's trying so hard. This dog is trying so hard. But I can tell like she's starting to worry a little bit. So those are indicators that I see in my dog when I know that she's starting to have a hard time of it. You know, I set her up for an exercise. I can't get her to bounce, or she's panting, looking at me, just panting with her mouth open a little bit. Instead of that bright eyed, ears up, expressive look of like, let's go do the thing. I'm mm-hmm. seeing some waning in her attitude, maybe some waning in her confidence. And it's really clear with Ever. Like, she either looks like she's ready to go take on the world with her little face with her ears up, or she looks like she wants to crawl in a hole and die. Like, she is completely, I can see it. It's really obvious with her. So those are some of the things I see with her. And some of the, you know, her response time to things starts to slow down a little bit. You know, the sharpness of me cueing her and her response to the cue, it may not, you may not see it watching my video, but I feel it in the ring. I can feel that she's starting to just have a hard time of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when we trial that much, you're definitely taking money out of the bank, meaning, you know, we train and we motivate. And I always tell my students, like, you definitely want to build them up. You want to put money in the bank. You want to make all those behaviors really reinforcing to the dogs. And every time we trial in any venue, just the trial environment and the lack of high reinforcement, such as food and toys that we can't bring in the ring, definitely start to deplete that bank account a little bit in exercises, some more than others. So that's definitely something I always am thinking about, especially if I'm trialing that heavily in one day, let alone two. So so those were definite, and I knew that would happen. I knew that was going to be a thing. So what I did was I would just be in between classes. I'd go find a corner and certain behaviors that I could just do quietly in the corner, I would just jackpot the shit out of
it. Right.
Like tossing cookies at her, like right and left,
yep.
getting her barking, getting her back up, because it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot on the dog, you know.
Well, long chains, right?
Yeah.
With work that's not inherently self-reinforcing like some other behaviors, right? Like I'm not saying agility is easy, but for most dogs, the jumping, the tunnels, it's self-reinforcing for a lot of dogs, right? And for us, it's not. And then it's this, they're under pressure, just from the environment, from the judge, and it's an enormously long chain, and they're not getting reinforced for this long chain. And so you go to class after class, no reinforcement, no reinforcement, no reinforcement. The dogs start to worry. So what you're doing, what you did is perfect, right? It's go off to the side, reinforce some of those things heavily,
right,
to get the dog's confidence back. Right. And then do that in between.
Yeah.
So then what about Sunday?
Yeah. So then I left there Saturday feeling pretty good. You know, she had a great day. I was super proud of her. And then we went in Sunday and we failed our first two classes. But, you know, the takeaway on that for me was the failure. So I'll just tell you what we failed. So we went into, what did we go into first? We went into utility first. And she was actually, like, she was up. She came in Sunday morning. It was much cooler in the building too. It was rainy the day before and muggy as hell in that building. And the dogs were like, by the end of the day, it was so hot in there. The dogs were panting. It was miserable. So Sunday morning, it was cooler. I'm warming her up. She definitely was like, to me, more, she was ready to go. I was actually really pleased to see that because it was day two. We went into utility and she was great on our first two exercises. We go to do gloves. She bounces into her pivot for her glove. And I go to mark glove two and she's looking at one. And I'm like, shit. Then she remarked it to 2. I sent her. And at that point, she was really confused and she had lost confidence in which glove it was. And she went to 1 and then went to 2. Like, she was a mess. So I just helped her out. But after watching my video, this is why video is so important. My mark was not the mark I normally give her for that glove 2. And that's enough for this dog to be confused because it was a clarity issue in the ring. So right there after glove 2, she knew she made a mistake. And I could see her attitude go down because Ever's like that. She wants to be right so bad. Like, there's no room for mistake in her world. And she feels the world's going to collapse on her. So I immediately, like, acted like nothing happened. I told her she was a good girl. I went to go do set up for the moving stand, asked her for a bounce. She wasn't so sure still. Her ears were back. She had that look. I asked her again for her bounce. She gave me 1 and I told her how great she was. And she just, I was so happy because she recovered and she bounced back from those bad feelings she was having about her mistake. And the rest of her class was beautiful.
So let me just interrupt because this is so, so important. I talk about this all the time, but I can't talk about it enough because I see it constantly, right? It's an old belief, but it's still around and it's still pretty strong and prevalent that when a dog makes a mistake in the ring, they're being naughty and we need to tell them that they did it wrong. Because otherwise, they're going to think that they can do whatever they want in the ring. And I couldn't disagree with that more. If I hear that, I just want to, it makes me, my blood boils, my chest starts to hurt, right? because I'm watching these dogs and they are not doing it. They're upset. If they make the mistake, it's no different than a human. By definition, a mistake is we didn't do it on purpose. Everyone's made mistakes and we feel bad when we make a mistake. We never make a mistake and go, wow, I just completely messed that up. Isn't that cool? No, you're upset. Darn it. You're so dumb. Why did you just do that? You start beating yourself up, right? Dog's doing exactly the same thing. Meanwhile, the dog made the mistake because there's either an error in our handling or a hole in our training. It is always our fault, 100% of the time. I don't care what anybody says. I will fight you to the death on that. And I guarantee I can prove it because I've had countless people over the years swear to me the dog, quote unquote, only does it in the ring and I can get the dog to make the mistake in training, which means it's a training error, right? So the most, and the other part is people go in the ring and they're so caught up in what they want to achieve, right? I want to qualify. I want a placement. I want a certain score. And then when something goes awry, they freeze because they don't want to flunk. So they're watching the dog like as if magically the dog's going to suddenly divine what they wanted. And the dog never does, ever, right. Never. So the whole time the dog's just standing there, dog's already like, oh God, I don't know what you want me to do. And then you're just standing there in a stare down and the dog's like, oh God, oh God, oh God. And it gets worse and worse, right? So like I was telling my training partner this yesterday, like when my dog makes a mistake in the ring, I help them so quickly that I don't consciously even like, it doesn't click that they failed until after I help them. So I give my dog a down signal. My dog doesn't down. I immediately give a second signal down, dog downs. I go, good dog. And then my brain goes, well, we just flunked. My right. brain doesn't go, oh my God, my dog didn't, like, it doesn't go down that whole rabbit hole, right? It's help my dog immediately.
Right.
And then I tell my dog, like, wow, that was awesome. Dog brings me the wrong article. I pretend they brought me the right one. Like, I just act like they did it right because then you're saving your dog, you're saving them emotionally, and you're saving their confidence, right? Like everything else is, it's the time to fix that is in training, not in the ring. The dog does not learn that they can do that naughty behavior. They're doing it because they're confused, right? So if you help them, it'll go such a long way in their career, right? Like one time when Zaina was young, she picked up the right article and she just stood there and I could tell she was like totally not sure. I don't know why. It doesn't matter. I just said to her, yes. And she came in. So I said yes, which means we flunked. I could have waited, see if she figured it out. What I was like, no, I just helped her, right? I didn't care that I flunked. So the next day in utility again, she put her mouth on the right article. She would have done it, but there was like this slight hesitation as she picked it up. So I could tell she still wasn't 100% confident. So I just blew the class again. I just said, yes, good girl. So people are like, well, why did you do that? You blew two classes. Well, because from that day on, which was many years ago, knock on wood, the dog has never failed another article. Because I helped her in the ring. I didn't let her flounder. So whatever was bothering her, we got rid of that. And long term, I reaped the benefits from that.
Right. Right. Which is really important because, like, I don't want my dog to think that when we go into that ring, like, I want them always to have great feelings going into that ring. It's hard enough. So if my dog needs help, I will too blow the class. Or if they make a mistake, I will absolutely give them the information of what they're supposed to do. I don't really care. Because I don't want them having that association of, I'm going to go in that ring and I'm never going to get help. So standing there staring at your dog, hoping and praying that they'll come up with the answer, which they won't, because now they're in this like cloud of anxiousness with you just staring at them just only makes it worse. So to me, helping the dog is just going to boost their confidence in the ring, that they're not going to be left there to hang out and dry. You know, and what happened in the open ring was kind of the same thing. Of course, it was my fault after watching my video. She didn't drop on the drop on recall. So watching my video, Ever comes in, I give her the drop signal and I'm like, oh, yep, not the drop signal I normally give her. Cause she went down halfway and I could see it on her face. I don't know what that is. That's not the signal you normally give me. So I immediately just helped her, dropped her again, called her in. And then the judge said, well, that was too bad. And I totally just ignored him and went on my merry way like nothing happened. Told her she was a good girl, got her bounce into the next exercise. Because I'll tell you what, standing there, flinging your arms in the air after they fail, shaking your head in disappointment, your dogs feel all of that. And it is not going to help you build their confidence in the ring at all when they make a mistake. Because like you said, it's not their fault. You know, it's usually a training issue, a handling issue.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, so, you know, first off, I always tell people you need to set different goals, right? Like your goal should never be to qualify for, like your goal should be to do your handling perfectly, or to, you know, be in a, like be happy and supportive of your dog. You should have intrinsic goals. Like I always have goals where I want to see if something I've been working on is improving. I want to see if I can do my handling properly, maintain my dog's attitude, like that kind of thing. So therefore, if things go awry, it's like not the end of the world. I'm not like, oh God, this is terrible. And then my dog like reads that. I think some people in the moment don't know what to do. right? So like I always say, if you don't know what to do to help your dog in that moment, just tell them they're right. Just release them. Go, yes, good dog. Have them come in. Tell them they're brilliant. Do a couple tricks. Get their attitude back. Move on, you know, with the rest of the class. Because I do know, I do understand that, like, in that moment, it's easy for us to understand what to do in terms of how to help the dog. But sometimes people are like, well, I wasn't sure. Should I have done this? Should I have done that? Well, I'm like, instead of doing nothing, default, you don't know what to do, release your dog and praise them and tell them they're brilliant. Don't talk to the judge. Don't roll your eyes. Don't look at your friends out of the ring watching you. Just look at your dog. Yeah. Tell your dog they're perfect and, you know, get their engagement back and then move on.
Right. Right. Because, you know, I mean, I know, speaking from training and trialing ever, she is incredibly sensitive to me. I mean, she is sensitive to all of her cues, all of my handling. If my handling changes a slight bit, that dog, she will tell me that was wrong or she doesn't know. But aside from that, that dog can literally feel everything I'm feeling. And I swear she can read my mind. So I have to be so diligent in the ring because they are so intuitive to how we're feeling or in our body language that it's so important to me that I don't want her ever to think that she's made the mistake, that I'm disappointed in her, that she just cost us a class, because I just don't ever want that. Like, my goal is to always make my dog feel like $1 million in the ring. And it's always, always, always going to be on me when something went wrong in the ring, whether we make a substantial or we NQ. And you know, this weekend that was a thing. Like, so I went in Sunday morning and we NQ'd our first two classes because of handling mistakes. I was tired. It's a lot mentally. But then I got my shit together. I do. Like, I have to sit there and put my AirPods in and not really talk to people for a while because I need to, like, I need to really focus on what I need to do for my dog. Like, I don't want to let her down. Like, the dog is trying so freaking hard that I need to do the same thing. So I have to sit there and really focus on making sure I handle her correctly for the next two classes, which we did. And we did great. She had two really nice classes after that. So that's a big thing.
It's so hard. Like, it just fascinates me that people will train their dogs obsessively, right? And I'm not saying overtrain. I mean, they're into training. So they put an enormous amount of time and effort into training their dogs. And then they go to a trial and they completely fall apart because they don't do the work on themselves, like the mental management work. And like, it makes me crazy because like I preach to them all the time and they'll be like, well, what, give me some books that you read, and I'll name a book and they'll go, well, I read that. Well, it doesn't work like that. You don't just read it. Like, you have to work on yourself. Like, it has to be part of your training. Like, I do mental management work all the time, even still to this day.
Yeah.
Right. And part of a huge part of that is being super aware of what you're doing with your body and your cues when you're training, because people are so sloppy about that, right? And then making sure that you put in the work so that when you get to a trial, you are able to focus on what you need to do for your dog, right? And on the, so that your handling can be the same as in training. And people just don't work on that. They tell me these quote unquote horror stories like, oh, I got to the ring, to the trial, I was so nervous. Oh, people talk to me, I don't know what to do, this, that, and the other thing. And I'm like, okay, it's very simple. Don't talk to anybody. Just don't, right? Focus on what you need to do and just focus on your dog. Your dog is your partner. Your dog gets there. They're in a vacuum. Like they don't arrive and go, oh, I'm at a show. All right. I know this is so important to my mom, so I better like do my best work and cover for all her mistakes. They are just in a building, right? Now they, the only thing they have to go on is cues, right? Who's giving the cues? Well, theoretically us. Are we giving them information they understand? A lot of times we're not. We think we are, but we're not. So if we don't act exactly the same as in training, give them the same cue system, the dog's standing there like, I don't know what to do, right? And then we're, then people are like, oh, I have a different dog in the ring. It blows me off. My dog, you know, didn't feel like it today, this, that, the other thing. And it's almost, it's always, it's never that, right? It's always that, it's never that. The dog's desperately staring at you for information and you're doing something different. And the dog's like, I have zero idea what that means.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's really hard. It's really hard to stay focused at a trial, right? Because everyone's milling about, you see friends, you get caught up talking. And how many of us stand ringside watching the class, wanting to see the heel pattern, wanting to know where things are set up? And two exhibitors go by and you still don't know where the healing pattern starts. Like, right?
That happens. Because, oh, right? It happens to me all the time. Like I can't, I just have to go up now with headphones in because I have the attention span of a flea. And then when I tell people that, they think I'm lying. They argue with me, right? Because clearly they live in my brain, not, but. They're like, you are so focused. I'm like, no, that's training. That's right. Self-discipline. That's practice, right? Like if I'm watching the ring to see how everything's set up and someone comes over and talks to me, I completely lose track of what was going on in the ring. So now I got to start over, right? And so every time that happens, I have to start over and start over. I'm like, oh my God. So I have to put headphones in. Not interact with anybody, watch with complete concentration so that I can get all the information I need. Then if I want to, I can talk to people. I often don't for two reasons. One reason being, again, like for me to maintain my focus on what I need to do and do my job, I have to stay in a certain place because I'm so easily sidetracked that my brain goes completely off like on a runway. And then it's so hard for me to reel myself back in. And that's exhausting. The other reason I don't is because I can't take the negativity, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that it's too hot, too cold, too wet, too windy, too dry, too bright, too dark. That, you know, you hope your dog felt like being a good dog today. On and on, you know, oh, the judge shouldn't be doing this. The judge shouldn't be doing that. Like, it's just never ending. Right. And I don't want to hear it, right? I just want to be in my head, focusing on what I need to do for my dog. That's it. Now, you know, other people, I see them, they're talking all the time. I just don't think that's super productive. I'm not saying we can never talk to anybody, but not if it's going to interfere with your performance only because it's not fair to your dog, right? And that's pretty much what you said earlier. Like, it's not fair that we ask them to do these really challenging tasks, which I don't care what sport you do. If you do field trials where you're like, oh, well, it's inherently reinforcing, they get the duck, or they do agility, oh, it's a real, still, they're relying on us. All these sports have rules, very specific rules, right? Yeah. And things the dogs must abide by. And we have to do our job. And if we're not focused, we're not going to do our jobs, I guarantee you. You know, right. And people really need to take that more seriously, because like it's kind of the same thing you said. Many, many years ago, someone was coming and doing a mental management workshop at this dog school, right? And people were like, oh, you should go. And I'm like, all right, I'll go. And of course, you know, the person wrote a book, so I had to prep because I'm a little bit of a cuckoo head. So I get the book and I go through the book and I'm like, oh my God. Every single thing the book said, the book would say, you shouldn't do this, you should do that instead. Every single chapter in that book, I did all those things. Everything you should not be doing, I was doing everything wrong. Everything. And I was like, I sat there and I just had this epiphany. I was like, I have this dog right now that dog would have jumped off a cliff for me without blinking an eye. That right. dog lived, breathed, existed to make me happy, to do what I asked that dog to do. And he gave me 150% every time. And I said, oh my God, like, this is so unfair. Like, I'm a train wreck. And yet I'm asking this dog to do these super hard tasks. Like, I better get my act together. So I made a commitment every day. I spent like 15 minutes every single day religiously working on the tasks that book, you know, gave. It was really good. It gave you, it's Jane Savoy's book. It's not just about the ribbons. I'll put the link in the show notes. Right. But it told you what to do instead, right? I worked on that stuff solidly, consistently, religiously for almost a year. And my goal was that at the end of that year, I was going to be at my first ever national with Tyler. And my goal was that when I got there, I would be able to execute my mental management goals. So I would not do all these, you know, crippling things, self-sabotaging things I had done in the past. I would do the things I had been working on. That was literally my only goal at that national. For 2 days, that was my only goal, was that I held up, I had notes, I reviewed my notes constantly, that I held up my end of the bargain, that I kept my head on straight, that I didn't do anything that I didn't want to do. Right. And that was my goal. And from then on, and I've never stopped working on it, because I realized like what a profound positive impact that had. And, you know, I just never forget that obligation that I have to my dog.
Right. Right. It's a game changer for sure. You know, and we could do a whole other episode on that for sure. But, you know, some of the things I hear going on ringside, you know, just people talk, you know, there's just some people who, if you walk by them and they have an opportunity to tell you that they're going to blow their class, they hope that their dog will do this and that, and that he's probably going to fail again. Like that's kind of some of the stuff we're talking about too, is, you know, I make a lot of mental notes. I actually write things on an index card. It's on the top of my crate because I need those visual reminders, because mm-hmm. we all get caught up in it. There's a lot of noise at trials. There's a lot going on, and you're hearing a lot of stuff. That's why I have AirPods in half the time, but I need my visual reminders. of what I need to do for my dog, you know, my, like you said, my obligation, my responsibility to hold up my end, to do my very best as Ever's partner in the ring. And that helps me a ton. And I will literally, between trials, and I did this Saturday, is I will add stuff to the card. Like, oh my gosh, I need to remember to do this. Oh my gosh, I didn't do that. I need to remember to do that. And it does help me a lot. That helps me a ton.
Yeah, I love, it's so funny that you said that. Like, it, this is so crazy. I have an obsession with index cards.
Oh.
And yeah. So same thing. I have like a mantra that I like to say before I go in the ring. Like for Zeal, it was always slow, flow, connect. Because when I get like wound up, right, when I'm competing, I get amped up. That's just how I'm wired. I'm like, yeah. All right, let's go.
Yeah.
And Zeal would go, if I even thought in my head, if I did nothing with my body and in my head, I'm like, all right, we're going to crush this. He'd go, oh God, oh God, oh God. Right. So I had to, and I get fast. Like I get fast. Let's go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So no, that does not. So with Zeal, I had to go really like slow, take my time. Don't, you know, stay connected 100% of the time. Cause if I even, I couldn't even eye flick away from him, he would just have a nervous breakdown. And, yeah, and just flow. So just go, take my time, flow from one thing to the other. So that mantra made sense to me. It doesn't, you know, work for everybody with that dog. And I had that on index cards everywhere, just as a constant reminder, like, this is how what you're going to do. You're going to go nice and slow.
Yeah.
With multiple dogs, I started like two sheets of notes, one for one dog, one for the other dog. And I'm going to have, cause an index card won't fit it because they're polar opposites.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They need their own. They need their own.
It's so crazy. They're so completely opposite. And it's my struggle has been, when I default, like my habits are so ingrained because I'm so conscious about, you know, my handling, etc., that when I just go on autopilot, I go on autopilot for the dog I've been showing the longest, Zaina, right?
Yeah, right.
And then I'm in the ring with Zest and like, I'm like, okay, handle Zest, you know, happy, light, easy. And I'm halfway through the class and all of a sudden I look down and he looks like not happy. And I'm like, oh gosh, darn it. I fucking did it again. I went on Zaina autopilot and he's like, oh God, oh God. And I'm like, okay, sorry, buddy. Yay. Good boy, Zessie. Cause with her, if I do that, she'll just bark and she'll just, you know, do God knows what crazy shenanigans she'll do. Cause she'll be like, oh, we're just having a party.
Yeah.
So with her, I have to go in and I have to be like, right here, sit, don't do the, and then she's, and when I act like that, she's happy as a clam.
Because right.
she to her, that just means she goes, okay, we're working. Oh, it's serious. Let's go. You know, she doesn't get upset by it. But if I do that, if I even think that with Zest, he just like has a meltdown. So,
Right.
It's been a huge challenge. And the last trial I was at, the second day, a couple times in the middle of his runs, like I caught myself going into Zaina mode. So I left there and I was like, all right, this is ridiculous. Like you need to get it together. So what I'm doing now is, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, I sit down and I go, okay, I'm going in the ring with Zaina. And then I put myself in that state of mind and I visualize like a run through with her and her handling. And then I go, okay, now I'm going in with Zest. Change it all around, right?
Yeah.
And then visualize a run through with him. And it's harder with him. I have to like really pay attention and make sure I don't slip into autopilot Zaina mode. And I'm going to have to do a lot of that And then in training, I have to be super mindful, like, okay, like I stand there, I look at the dog in front of me. I go, okay, it's this dog. Before I even pick the dog up, I'm like, this is what I have to do. This is how I have to be. Okay.
Yep.
And then do that. Because when I'm showing the two of them at the National and they're going in ring after ring and they're polar opposites, I better
switch. You got to be able to switch.
Yeah. Fast. Yeah.
Fast.
And if I don't practice that all the time, I'm not going to be able to do it. And then I'm going to make a mistake and it's going to be my, and the dog's going to suffer.
Right. Yep. Yeah. That's a great example. When you are showing multiple dogs that are completely handled differently, which most are, depending on your dog.
Yeah.
You know, that's definitely a thing.
Yeah, and I think people need to understand that even, you know, people always make these assumptions like, because I've been doing this a long time, oh, I don't even have to think about it. Or oh, I don't know. The reason it looks that way is because I put all that work in all the time still to this day. Right. That gives, then it gives the illusion. At a trial, right? People look at me and they go, she's not nervous. She, you know, doesn't even have to think about handling. They make all these assumptions and most of them are not true.
Right. Right. There's a lot of work that goes into it. A lot of work that goes into it. For sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just hope I just keep preaching to people, you know, do your mental management work. It's just so interesting. They just don't do it. I don't know why. I don't know why.
I don't know why either. I don't know why either. It is, and it's hard. Like, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of my brain power to do that stuff. Like, it's easy just to sit there in my chair and just zone out, but I don't. Like, I really do sit there in between and I'm like, I'm constantly replaying shit that happened in the ring. Like this weekend, I felt like my brain was like a video recorder. I kept replaying all the stuff, you know, and then, you know, when you're at the trial, I'm trying to readjust, remember things, handle my dog, based off of a lot of what has already gone on in trial one, trial two, trial three, trial four. And then when the weekend was over, I mean, it was like, it was crazy. And what happens with me post-trialing after the actual show is over, I get in my car. I'm like, all I do is sit there again and replay everything that went on in my head. I don't even listen to music or podcasts or anything like that. I just sit there driving, replaying everything. And why I do that, because I know not everybody does that. I do that personally because when I go home, I have to switch gears. Like I have my daughters waiting for me. They know I'm coming home. My husband's waiting for me. I've been gone the whole weekend. So like, they're not going to want me walking in the door and being like, sit down, let me tell you everything that happened in the ring. Like, they're going to be like, no, did you do well? That's all we care about. That's right. So I have to, because of my lifestyle and where I'm at, I have to switch gears. Like I have to walk through the door and I'm wearing a different hat at that moment. So driving home is my time to really replay stuff. And then when I have time where I know I can sit, I try my best to record all my runs. I sit down and I watch all my videos, you know, and then I see stuff that may have felt horrible in the ring at the time, but I'm like, wow, that actually wasn't too bad. And wow, look at it, like she came back from the dead in that, you know, after that exercise. And that's where I make a lot of notes and things that I need to work on in our training, you know. So
I think that post-child drive reflection is super important too, because that's always where I like figure out I solve the problem, right? Because it's still fresh in my head.
Yeah.
So I'm driving and I'm like, you know, my dog came flying in and instead of fronting, jumped up at me and then fronted. So I'm in the car and I'm like just driving along, no music or anything. So my brain can just like percolate. And all of a sudden I'm like, oh, duh.
Right.
Like the last training session, three times he jumped on me and I laughed because I thought it was cute and funny. So I basically reinforced it. So of course that's why he did it. Oh, okay. Now I know. All right. Now I, and then I come up with a plan. All right, this is how I'm going to fix it. Or, you know, sometimes I'm like, God, I don't understand why that happened. And I just like let it simmer. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I think I know why that happened. Or at least I have a couple of ideas why, right? If you wait too long to do that, you just forget, right? Yeah. It just gets murky. Yeah. We start thinking about other things, life gets in the way. So I think that's super important to process it. And you have to do it kind of unemotionally, right? Like, humans are so emotional.
Yeah.
And they wrap all their feelings up into what happened, right? Like, oh, I'm not good enough. I'm a terrible trainer. I'm embarrassed. Everybody saw me fail. Oh, who cares? None of that's important. Like, it's all irrelevant. Like, just be a scientist. So I give myself time. If I'm upset or bummed out, I'm like, okay, you have 15 minutes or an hour. And after that, get over it. Like, it's not world peace. It's just a dog show, right? Then I go into, okay, I'm just going to be a detective now, right? Like, I'm going to pretend this happened to my student. Look at the data. Reflect back on my training. Reflect on my handling. Come up with some answers, go work it out in training, right?
Yeah.
So the whole emotional part is really important because that gets in the way of solving the problem, right? And you're only ever going to be happy when your dog does really well. Let me tell you something, boys and girls.
Yeah. Wake up.
They don't do well a whole lot of the time.
That's right. That's right. It's so going to happen.
You're going to be really sad a whole lot. So
yeah.
You got to learn to just look at, you know, reflect on what went well and feel really good about that. And then reflect on what didn't go well and then figure out how to make it better. That, in essence, is dog training and dog trialing.
Yes.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
It's a never ending cycle, right?
Trial
is a reflection of where we're at in our training. Take that information.
Train
better.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny because I'm sure you have felt this. You know, like, so Saturday, you know, Ever did really well. So we come out of class. Oh, that was so beautiful. That was perfect. Blah, blah, blah. She won 3 out of her 4 classes. And of course, that feels good. Like, who doesn't want to win? I don't care who you are. Like, if you're at a dog show or any sport, and you're competitive, like, of course you want to do well and you want to win. And then what happened was, like, Sunday morning, I come out of my class that I NQ'd. Nobody will look at me or talk to me.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and I'm like walking by and like they'll look at me with like sad eyes. I go, it's okay. Like,
yeah,
it's totally fine. Like, because the rest of our class was beautiful and I screwed up. Like, I'm sure it was me. Like, whatever. Like, but again, you do have to take the emotional part out of it. There's always gonna be, you know, no matter who we are, if something happens and we don't do well by nature, because I know I'm super competitive. I know you're super competitive. That there is a place for disappointment, but I quickly am moving. I'm like, just, I wash that all out. And I'm like, immediately I default to trying to solve why it happened, because I want to move on and make sure it doesn't happen again. Cause I, again, like, I'm always striving to better my handling for my dog, so that she has the best, clearest communication from me in the ring. You know, that's where they're going to be the most confident.
And it's so funny that you said that. So the last trial I was at, Zaina gave me a gorgeous class, right? It was so cute. She was so happy. She was trying so hard. She was so proud of herself, right? So last exercise, directed jumping, does the first one perfect. All she has left to do is another go out and a jump, right? So runs out, sits perfect. I cued her perfectly to the right jump. And I know I cued her perfectly because I disconnect and I look at the jump, right? Which means I sent her to the jump and I'm like, where the hell is she? She took the other jump, right? So the second the other reason I knew she took the other jump was I heard this collective really loud outside of the ring, everyone going, oh, right? So Zaina being Zaina, she lands the jump. I look at her and I'm like, what was that? And she's like, because she always tells me off when she makes a mistake, right?
Right.
So then I'm like, oh, get over here, you nut. Right. So I'm laughing, right? I'm not going to be mad at her. Like, what's that going to accomplish? Send her for the jump again. She does it right. I'm like, there you go. Good girl. Nice job. Whatever. And the judge looks at me and she's like, oh, I'm sorry. I go, and I'm laughing. I'm like, clearly I'm the only one in this building that's not horribly upset by the fact that she just flunked, right? Because everybody else was like, oh my God, this is so, you know, and I'm just like, whatever, you know.
Right.
Most of the class was gorgeous. Yeah, she made a mistake. I'm sure, you know, I'm pretty sure, even in that moment, I was pretty sure I knew why she did it. And it just is what it is, right? Like, you can't make yourself crazy. Would I have liked her to have qualified? Well, of course.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But at the same time, I'm not going to let her know first and foremost. And then if it's something that was really important to me, like maybe it was a bigger event or something like that, then I'm going to go and I'm going to walk away, right? And then I'm going to walk away and let all my anger and frustration out privately. And then I'm over it, right? But I'm not going to do it to the dog or in front of the dog, because I don't want the dog to be like, oh God, what just happened? And quite frankly, at that point, like, I see people get, you know, bring their dog back to the crate, throw it in the crate. Like,
oh God.
The dog at that point, it is not connecting that moment to the failure.
Right.
Right. Like, they live in the moment. If it's too late now, it's done, it's over. Like, get on with it, you know? And people make mistakes in training all the time. Like, all the time, a lot of mistakes, me included. Now, imagine if every time we did that, our dogs would be like, you know what? You suck. And they just walked away and left us.
Right.
Which they should.
They should.
Right? Because it's only fair.
It's true.
But when they mess up, people don't have much tolerance for that.
No,
you know, so I think that's something everybody really needs to think about, right? Because we're the cuckoo heads that are asking our dogs to do these sports with us. And like I said, even if it's a sport that's not as, like, I don't want to say not as hard as obedience, but like, I think of scent work, right? It's inherently self-reinforcing. Guess what? You can still stress your dogs out. There's still rules. There's still challenges. There's still handling involved.
Right. Yep.
Same with field training. You know, people are like, oh, they should just know to get the bird. Absolutely not. Your handling plays an enormous role, as does your training, because there's rules involved. They can't just run to get the bird however they want. They have to run in a straight line. There's hazards in the way to push them off that line on purpose. Like, it, all the performance sports are hard because they have rules. So we ask our dogs to do that. You know, we should respect that they're doing the very best they can. And if that falls short, that that's really not the dog's fault. That's our responsibility. And then we just need to work on it. You know, yep. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forever. It never Forever. Ends.
It never ends. It never ends. It never ends.
All right. So it looks like, oh, look at that. We're at an hour. So I think it will be interesting, to do two things is if you showed a video, like the fourth class on Saturday, and maybe like point out or talk over some of the subtle signs so yeah. that people can start to look for these things with their dogs and realize that sometimes it's something subtle, but that subtle information will lead to something bigger if you don't address it in the moment.
Right.
Also, we should post some videos of us like handling an error in the ring, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure I can dig some of those up so people can see like in real time what we actually do when an error occurs.
Right.
And how we are with the dog after the error, right? I just proceed like as if the dog did it perfectly and the dog, you know, so that the dog can recover.
Right.
I'm trying to think. Oh, right. So I mentioned Jane Savoy for mental management. Like I always tell people, it's a really personal thing. We're so lucky right now. There's YouTube videos for free on mental management. There's podcasts for free. There are books. There are books you can listen to on Audible. You just have to try some different books from different authors, kind of figure out what style resonates and makes sense for you, you know, and then kind of follow that path. But you really should do something, right? Doing nothing is just not fair.
Right.
In my True. Opinion, anyway.
I agree. I agree 100%. Definitely.
All right.
It's the hardest part.
What's that?
I said that's the hardest part. I think it's one of the hardest parts for sure.
It is. But it's so important. And the super bonus is if you're doing it routinely and consistently, the same concepts apply to everyday life. You know?
Right.
So like putting positive thoughts in your head instead of negative thoughts. Well, don't just do it on trial day. Do it all the time. So now the work you're doing, it's not just going to help your dog and you when you compete. It's just, it's going to have a positive impact in your everyday life.
Yeah.
Because absolutely. That stuff applies across the board, you know?
Yeah.
So that's super important. Any last thoughts?
No, I think that we covered a lot. You know, just a lot of the stuff that goes on at trials in between the classes, during the classes, driving home. You know, we touched on a lot of really important subjects. So hopefully those will help people. And along with the videos, then you can kind of see what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All awesome. Good. Well, congratulations on a great weekend. And more importantly, for being the best partner for your dog.
Yeah,
because
thank
she
you.
Does try. They all try. They are all trying super hard.
They are.
And we really have to change our mindset and understand that that's always the case. And that if they're struggling, we just need to figure out what's going on. And then we can help them out.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So.
All right. Sounds good.
That's another episode. Thank you for sharing your weekend, Lori. And
yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.